Hello, and welcome to One World, One Health, with the latest ideas to improve the health of our planet and its people. I'm Maggie Fox. Planet Earth faces pollution, climate change, and new and re-emerging infectious diseases, and they're all linked. This podcast is brought to you by the One Health Trust with bite-sized insights into ways to help. In this episode, we're taking a look at how animal and human health are directly linked through the use of antibiotics in farm animals. We've looked at this issue in some other episodes of One World, One Health, and today we're chatting with Dr. Nicolas Fortenay, a senior researcher in sociology at the French Institute for Agricultural Research, part of Paris-Dauphine University. Farmers routinely give antibiotics to their livestock, partly to keep them healthy, but mostly because they help the animals grow faster and bigger. The World Health Organization has been asking the food industry to stop giving these powerful drugs to healthy animals, but the practice remains routine. Nicolas is studying some of the reasons why this still goes on and what can be done about it. Nicolas, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for your invitation.
First off, can you explain why antibiotics are so widely given to livestock?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I mean, antibiotics have been given to animals in livestock production for more than half a century, actually, from the late 40s, early 50s. The livestock industry started basically to put or to add antibiotics in the feed of production animals. And the objective at the very beginning was not actually medical. It was actually what we called antibiotics as growth promoters. So there was a role in the development of industrial agriculture to use more and more antibiotics because it was allowing basically the farmers to grow their animals quicker. Started with mostly with the poultry and then the pig industry and then all the bovine industry as well took on this kind of practice. Of course, antibiotics are not only used for that, and they are also used for medical purposes to treat animal diseases because, as you and me, animals can get sick, in particular when they are raised in specific conditions where basically the sanitary situation is a bit tricky when they are stuck in kind of factory farms and so on. So basically antibiotics are also given, of course, to treat animal diseases and to prevent animal diseases. Scientifics and policymakers and so on have realized from the 60s basically and the 70s onwards that using antimicrobials in livestock farming could produce what we call now antimicrobial resistance, which means basically the development of resistant bacteria as a consequence of the use or the overuse of antibiotics in livestock farming. And then those resistant bacteria could be transmitted or disseminated to humans through food, environment, or contact with animals and so on.
So you have been looking specifically at how relationships among veterinarians, farmers, drug companies, the food industry, and public officials affect antibiotic use. Can you tell us a little bit more about that research?
Yes, of course, because as you have noticed, I'm a sociologist or a social scientist, because of course I work with not only with sociologists, but also anthropologists, political scientists, geographers, and so on. And social sciences have not that much been used until very recently to try to apprehend and analyze the issue of antimicrobial resistance, and more particularly the antimicrobial use in livestock production. And so what we do believe is that it is very important to understand how and why antimicrobials are still used basically in livestock production. And for that, we need to understand much better the attitude, the behaviors of the prescribers, of the farmers, but also all the strategies and I would say the structural factors of the livestock industry, of the political institutions, how the markets, for example, the food markets or the veterinary drug market work, to understand basically how all the system of livestock farming is working and is keeping on pushing on the use of antimicrobials in farm animals. Within a European project which is called ROADMAP, which is an interdisciplinary project, to be honest, but where social science perspectives are kind of driving basically the theoretical and methodological perspective of the project, where basically we are trying to understand the different levels and dimensions that are impacting the way antimicrobials are used, and also how through these different dimensions we can develop strategies to keep reducing the use of antimicrobials. So a lot of the work we've done was dedicated to understand how farmers are basically constrained and experience and live basically animal health management. But also, as you mentioned, we've done a lot of work with the veterinarians, who are the prescribers and in some cases the sellers of antimicrobials. So it was also quite interesting to try to understand how veterinarians can move towards more preventive approaches to animal health, where basically antimicrobials are used in a more prudent way, in a more prudent approach, which means, of course, using much less antimicrobials.
What are some of the incentives you can use to get the industry and farmers to use fewer antibiotics?
Basically, the farmers to be able to use less antibiotics, of course, they need very nice and efficient farm infrastructures, which requires most of the time important investment, you know, renewing the buildings, paying for a more efficient feed for the animals, and so on.
So they need help to use fewer antibiotics, because if you have intensive factory farms, they need to use them. So you need to help them make the facilities more spread out, less crowded.
Yeah, that is one of the solutions. And also investing in buildings that provide a better biosecurity for animals and things like that. So yes, the livestock industry, the way it has developed, there was a development of those what we call sometimes the factory farms, which are not very, concerned about, which were not that much concerned about animal welfare or animal health, and basically the living conditions of the animals weren't optimized for using very few antibiotics. So that requires massive investment to change the technical structure or infrastructures of the systems. Yeah.
And then you also think some regulation has got to be required.
One of the issues of antimicrobial resistance is that we are also lacking of new antibiotics. We struggle to renew the antibiotic arsenal. And that requires also massive investments in research and innovation. For in the university, in the pharmaceutical industries, and so on, to look for innovation that can replace basically antibiotics. And that won't happen without important public investment for that. Another aspect is, of course, to have a regulatory system that is able to monitor and control the use of antibiotics in a much more finer way and much more precise way. There are still a lot of countries in the world where we don't know much how much antibiotics are used, how they're used, when they're used, if they are used or not. And we need as well a lot of public investments to create those monitoring system, surveillance system that will help basically to monitor our trajectory towards prudent use of antimicrobials.
And as you said, the European Union has managed to reduce the use of antibiotics. And can you just tell us very briefly how they did that? Was this a combination of carrots and sticks, regulations and incentives?
You know, each country has kind of a policy style, you know, like depending on their history and political culture and so on. So, and it's kind of fascinating to observe that all those, you know, 8, 10, 12 Western European countries have achieved relatively similar results with sometimes very different toolkits. So in some countries, yes, public regulation, so basically law enforcement and more constraint when needed was the key. In other countries, you know, accompanying, supporting the industry to basically support the farmers and the vets has been basically the answer. So it depends, but of course, this cannot happen if there is not a massive public engagement towards this achievement.
And of course, this is a big reduction, but is that enough?
Well, that's always the question. Of course, what is important to say first, that it is unrealistic or even would be foolish to consider that zero antibiotics should be the objective, because as I said, animals get sick and they deserve to be treated when they're sick, you know, for animal rights, animal welfare, and so on. But yes, we do believe that it is possible to go even further. And for that, it will require a more precise monitoring and understanding on antimicrobial use that is left, you know, which molecules are still being used, in which conditions, at what time, by who. Because, of course, here we're talking about, you know, average figures, but we need to be more precise on which sector, which types of farms is still using more antibiotic than the others and why. You know, antimicrobial resistance is a global problem, so which means that it comes from all over the world, and every country, every farmer, every vet should be involved basically in this objective of reducing antimicrobials. However, European countries or North America don't have the same food system than southern countries, you know, land in Africa or Southeast Asia and so on. So I do believe that it is very important to understand the specificity and the specific needs of each country. You know, it's a little bit like with climate change, you know, we can't ask for the same contribution to everyone because not everyone contributes in the same way of the global problem. And I do believe that this mindset with regard to the antimicrobial resistance global issue is not fully understood yet. And in some countries, in some African countries, in some Southeast Asian countries, you know, there are not that much facing an issue of excess of antibiotics than an issue of lack of access to antibiotics. And it's been showed by some of our colleagues, including in the roadmap project that I mentioned, because we are also working in a couple of southern countries, that shown that if we try to implement the same tools, the exact same tools with the same restrictions and so on in those countries, of course, we may reduce excess of antibiotic, but also access to antibiotics, which would have dramatic consequences for animal health and welfare, but also food security in these countries. So we need to be much more clever at a global level, not to basically impose our northern or western views and solution of the problem to countries where the problem is structured quite differently, and where basically the support they need is not exactly the same than the one we have developed for our own settings.
Nicola, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us about this.
Thank you very much again for your invitation. It's been a pleasure to chat with you today.
Listeners can share this podcast, which is brought to you by the One Health Trust, by email, LinkedIn, or your favorite social media platform. And let us know what else you'd like to hear about at owoh@onehealthtrust.org. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to One World, One Health, brought to you by the One Health Trust. I'm Ramanan Lakshminarayan, founder and president of the One Health Trust. You can subscribe to One World, One Health on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media at One Health Trust, one word, for updates on One World, One Health and the latest in research on One Health issues like drug resistance, disease spillovers, and the social determinants of health. Finally, please do consider donating to the One Health Trust to support this podcast and other initiatives and research that help us promote health and well-being worldwide. Until next time.